Hey everyone, John here. Just a quick word of warning. We will be spoiling this film in its entirety. So if you have not seen this film and you don't want it spoiled for you, just hit pause real quick and go and watch the movie and then come back and enjoy the show.
Now, God, that lady has the worst timing in the world. All
What?
right, you take Sophie. I'll clean upstairs, you clean downstairs, and get the illicit drugs.
What?
Hey everyone, and welcome to another episode of Surviving Chick Flicks. I am John, now with boosted 5G. And I have
Sammy.
Co-hosts on this
show. Oh, wait.
And I have a third. Yeah, that's you.
Oh!
Oh my God. We're a professional podcast, I swear.
Sometimes. Yeah,
1200 listens, and I can't, and I don't know why.
For gems like these, yes. It's authentic, John. It's authentic.
All right, and what's your name?
I'm trying to remember. Oh, yeah, it's Joseph.
And this week, well, we're doing a Sammy pick, as you can tell with John's enthusiasm and Joseph's. General excitement. Sammy, what did you torture us with this week?
Well, I decided to kick off Hygelpocalypse with a good one, Life as We Know It.
I'm sitting here and I'm questioning what I did to you to make you do, make me watch a Katherine Heigl movie.
Yeah, I'm
and you can't and you
Sleepaway
can't say
Camp,
the
polyester, Timmy and the T-Rex.
Yeah, and you pay. First of all, I didn't pick Wanda.
That's fair.
Second of all, Wanda was an incredibly successful episode. So,
what the question is, what did I do to deserve this? Because all the movies I've picked have been really good.
See, new Mortal Kombat movie.
Well, this hasn't happened yet, so you can't just.
Also, you know. It's not a new Mortal Kombat movie, it's an incredibly old Mortal Kombat movie. Oh, which, by the way, listeners,
still,
we're doing
tell me
one
I'm
of the
wrong.
Mortal... Look, for once, I'm not on Joseph's side now, so...
Well, see, you picked this movie before I picked Mortal Kombat.
That is fair.
Okay, fine.
So,
then just blame it on John.
No. Did we say the name of the movie? I can't remember.
Yes, we did.
Okay. is that a side effect of the booster shot where I'm just like, can't, you know, I have the memory of a goldfish now? Who are you people again? What are we doing?
That's the that's the side effect of a Katherine Heigl movie.
God, yeah. And a Josh Duhamel movie who, as listeners might remember, was in one of John's favorite movies where he threw things.
Hey, there were no ghosts in this movie, so...
There were dead people, but no ghosts.
That's correct. Very true. So I call this a success.
All right. But to Joseph and I, so why don't we play the trailer and then we'll get to either shredding this movie and while Sammy tries her best to defend it.
Can I leave?
Just an hour, but you know.
All right. Hey, you?
11?
Yeah, why don't we, make it 10:30?
Austin, promise I never have to see him again.
Guys, come on, I want to get a picture of Sophie with her godparents.
Cheese!
Yes, this is she.
Did Allison and Peter speak with you about who would take care of Sophie in the unlikely event that they should both die?
No.
Well, they named you.
I'm sorry. They picked us together.
Believe me, I tried to advise them against it, but there are options. We have Peter's father.
I think she looks just like you.
Okay. Sophie, no. Good as new.
Still breathing.
Yay.
Are we
we supposed to live in this house together?
We are part of a plan.
Some chick says, oh, mister, you can forget the condom.
Are you okay?
And I say no, and I still end up with the kid.
We need to figure out a schedule. That's my night off.
Are you happy to get rid of your old life? Because your old life sucked.
My life was great every time.
You know what? Bake more?
They love Sophie more than anything in the entire world, and out of everyone, Messer, they picked us. She's making the poop face.
What do you mean she's making the poop face?
Oh, God, she's going to poop in the tub. Hurry up, hurry up. She's going to poop on me.
Or the side.
Okay.
No.
Oh, my God, that's my hat.
How's that wine treating you?
I think you guys make a really cute couple.
She said the same thing about Taylor Swift and that Twilight kid.
Oh, hi! He's about to walk.
Fuller!
How do I stop him?
Russ Fuller, I'm puppy! Oh, God, I'm
I just gave her a little shove. I finally figured out why Peter and Allison picked us, and it's not because we knew them best. It's because you and me together, Sophie, somehow, we're a family.
Oh my God, what is that?
Oh! It's like Slumdog Millionaire in there.
Get her out of her toes.
Okay, I gotta go.
No, it's burning my eyes.
Hey, Miss Price.
Oh.
What?
Sweetie, you have poo on your face.
All right. Life as we know it. Yes, I had to scroll up to remember the title because I've been calling it the wrong title as a joke for the last 7 days. Starring history's greatest monster, Josh Duhamel, Josh Lucas, Christina Hendricks, someone named Hayes MacArthur, and with random cameos from Rob Hubel, Andrew Daly, Melissa McCarthy, Will Sasso, Jessica St. Clair, and Kumail Nanjiani, directed by Greg, I know dirty secrets about the CW, so therefore they let me run the channel, Berlanti. Then let's start as we always do. Joseph, Sammy, when was the first time you saw this movie? Let's go with Joseph. Yeah.
I don't remember the first time I saw it, but it wasn't in theaters, and I think it was when I was married. My wife at the time rented it, and we watched it, and I don't think I was very happy.
There's a metaphor there I'm not going to touch.
Y'all are awful. That's all I have to say. Just awful, awful, terrible human beings.
And you do a show with us.
And sure. You need to seek help, both of you.
Well, yeah, that's been evident for a long time.
Point me in the direction of a good therapist. It's not going to abandon his practice on me. Oh, that got a little,
a little dark there. I'm pretty sure I saw this in theaters. Like,
really?
Yeah, like 98% sure I saw this in theaters. Well, this is one of those ones where I'm pretty sure I'd seen the commercial and wanted to see it because I was going through like a Josh Duhamel phase after.
As you do.
Correct. After I can't remember exactly, but I think it was called How to Win a Date with, or no, not, it wasn't How, but like.
Win a Date with Tad Hamilton.
Yes, Win a Date with Tad Hamilton. That's what it was.
I think we called him Tad. And I realized I was getting him. Getting a person that doesn't exist and Tab Hunter confused for a second.
Anyway, so I'm pretty sure I rushed to the theater to see it.
All right, so we're recording this on a Sunday for you listeners. So I watched it Tuesday for the first time. I had never seen this movie, nor would I have seen this movie unless I had been a paid film critic at the time, and I wasn't. So here we are. And it had nothing to do with
and
who was
And then you met me, and you are better for it.
I met you. We'll discuss better. So, should I tell the people what this is about?
You can if you want.
Yeah, it might be nice for those listeners who have not watched the film yet, which why in the world they would have picked this particular episode, I have no idea, but...
Sometimes you just check out what the new episode is. I mean, that's how I sometimes discovered some podcasts. Coming in on episode 5 of Serial was just weird.
Nothing made sense. Everything was out of order.
Yeah. What's a MailChimp? Anyway. Life as We Know It is the story of Hallie and Messer, a one-time setup by their best friends, Pete and Allison, who after one bad date, or bad attempt at a date, are forced together whenever their friends get married, have children, and so on. Despite their bad start, they find themselves named godparents to their friend's daughter, Sophie. After Sophie's first birthday party, a car accident takes away Pete and Allison, and Sophie is now in the care of Hallie and Messer. The pair reluctantly take on their new roles as co-parents and balance their lives as a restaurant owner and a technical director for the Atlanta Hawks as best as they can. Just like real parents, the pair are overwhelmed and unprepared. But at least they aren't dating each other. Messer continues his cliche single guy in a Hollywood movie behavior while Hallie begins expanding her business and falls for a pediatrician named Sam. However, Sophie gets sick and Messer interrupts Hallie and Sam's date in order to get Sophie some help. Hallie realizes how expensive raising a child is going to be and decides to cancel the remodel for her business, only for Messer to offer to help with the remodel. Hallie thanks him with a thank you dinner and then accidentally destroys Messer's motorcycle. The pair come back home, find Peter's last stash of pot, and decide to get hot while watching The Wiggles before they sleep together, as they do. The pair tries to make a relationship work, but Messer gets a job offer to direct for the Phoenix Suns. When he doesn't disclose it right away, he is busted in front of Hallie, and the pair fight and decide to co-parent separately in two different time zones. Two very different time zones. Time heals the anger somewhat, and Messer is invited to Thanksgiving, where he reveals he is still in love with Hallie. And at the last CPS meeting before custody is given to Hallie and Messer, Hallie drags the poor CPS lady to the airport with her to catch Messer, but misses him. Returning home, Hallie finds Messer waiting for her, and the film ends as the happy couple celebrates not just Sophie's second birthday, but Messer and Hallie's anniversary. So,
and they lived happily ever after.
Roger Ebert.
Throw that in there.
Our boy, Roger Ebert, one of the great film critics of all time. I looked up to see if there was a review for him, and it is the saltiest thing I have ever read. This may shock you all, but Roger did not like this movie. He gave it 1.5 stars. But my favorite part was the last paragraph where he says, "So anyway, what happens in life as we know it? You'll never guess in a million years. Never. You might as well just give up now. I don't like spoilers, so let me just say, Hallie and Sam adopt Sophie and live happily ever after in the mansion. Aw."
You know what? I don't know who sucked all of the joy out of y'all's life.
Catherine Heigl?
Where do I start? How long do we have on this podcast?
We can go as long as we need.
It began when I was a child. My father once took me to the circus.
Joseph will give $100 to anyone that can answer where that reference came from.
Wait a minute. Why am I giving $100?
Because it's the safest bet in the world.
I don't like that.
Unless there's another Daffy Duck Quackbusters aficionado out there. Oh, wait. Oops. Joseph, I'll take the $100 now.
Yeah, no.
Well, this is probably one of my... I mean, I don't even want to say probably. This is one of my favorite Katherine Heigl films.
That was a high bar to clear, wasn't it?
Funny. No, I mean, she has some other good films. I would say 27 Dresses was really good. And I know there are others. They're just not kind of Knocked Up.
I would even argue against Knocked Up at this point in my life. And it has nothing to do with her. It has literally everything to do with everyone else in that movie.
And I will say, I debated between this and The Ugly Truth. Because that's also a good film. And I thought there might have been the potential that y'all would like The Ugly Truth more. But this one popped up first on Netflix, so.
Fair. Which one is The Ugly Truth? Why do I think Gerard Butler's in that one?
He is.
Oh. Is he like a hitman in that? Or am I?
No, he's a like a TV host.
Okay. Which one was he the hitman in?
Bounty Hunter. Jennifer Aniston.
I forgot they made another one together. I mean, I forgot he made one that was called Bounty Hunter.
Yeah.
He made a movie called Bounty Hunter?
Yes.
Yeah.
All right, can we just side note, why is Gerard Butler's career so terrible?
That's what I want to know, because
he's
actually a good actor.
Yeah, he started off with such promise. I mean, I don't like Phantom of the Opera, but I mean, it was a thing that happened, and it didn't make me that angry.
300 was fun.
Yeah.
Although he did one about, I forgot what it's called, where he's in a lighthouse back in, it's before the movie The Lighthouse came out.
Oh, the Has Fallen trilogy, which is apparently getting a 4th, 5th, and 6th century.
It was actually a good movie. He did a great job in it. He went completely batshit insane.
I think I fell asleep trying to watch Olympus Has Fallen, but I did see London Has Fallen in the theaters, and I feel that by skipping Olympus Has Fallen, I missed absolutely nothing.
But yeah, I think...
And as much as we love Gerard Butler, he is not in this particular film.
He should.
No, just the guy from the movie with the dead lady. If you can still bitch about...
No, I don't know. I mean... There was a lot that I particularly, there was a lot that I liked about this movie. I liked it from the, it's one of my, I can watch it any point in the movie. I go back to it. I'll fall asleep to it kind of films. I thought they had good chemistry, and I don't know. I liked the premise.
I please don't take what I'm about to say as an insult, because I don't mean it that way, but that makes sense. I can see, you know, this one being one of those that you put on is kind of, with me, like Sleepaway Camp, the comfort food kind of thing. It's like, I can put this on and not have to think about anything that's happening. I know everything that's going to happen. That kind of thing.
Yeah, I can see
that. Right. And, I mean, I thought it was a little bit unique in that, I mean, not that the story has not been told before. Some version of it, of course, has been. But what I liked about it. What?
I was going to say, what was it? Shakespeare said there's only like 7 stories and he wrote all 7.
Right. I just think that one of the things that was kind of nice about it was they didn't gloss over it. I think they made it a point in the film to point out that probably if it were not for these circumstances, these two people would never have ended up together. And there's some reality to the fact that trauma bonds people, but they kind of became a family for practical reasons more than the fact that, like, it wasn't as overly sappy and romantic. It was a lot more practical.
Yeah.
Like, they kind of just fell into being a family.
Yeah, I agree. It's not, you know, the sappiest of movies because this is basically two people that begrudgingly are semi-friends thrown into a situation neither of them would have ever dreamed about. Especially considering the film opens, and the film lulled me in with the Amy Winehouse song immediately, because I was like, okay, maybe this is gonna be good. But the film opens with Peter and Allison have set them up, and he is her blind date. They are like, she's Allison's best friend, he's Peter's best friend, and they think that the two would be perfect. And he shows up an hour late on his motorcycle and takes a booty call before they even drive off, and it ends badly. So that was a good start. And I love the fact that, you know, she's like,
odd. You would think that she would have been much more understanding of that situation. Honestly.
But I do like the fact that the last thing she says to Allison before the credits begin is, I hope I never have to see him again. And the credits is just a basically montage of the two of them having to be there at every important moment in Peter and Allison's life. Which, first time we meet Allison, I did not recognize at first that was Christina Hendricks. But I was like, I know this woman. I don't know where I know her from. And I was like checking Wikipedia. I'm like, oh my God, it's her.
It just took a bit to click.
Yeah.
Was this before she really took off, or was it during that time?
I don't... Having only seen one season of Mad Men, I don't remember. I feel like it was about maybe around the same time.
Yeah, give or take a couple years.
Yeah, because I've hit that point in my life where things that happened like 15 years ago are like 7 years ago in my head, and I'm wrong about that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Breaking Bad, it feels like it just ended, and, you know,
it's been off the air for a while.
Yeah. No, it hasn't been off the air. AMC's going to milk that shit like The Walking Dead until whoever owns AMC goes into bankruptcy. Because I don't have terrestrial TV anymore or satellite, but I guarantee you if I turn on AMC close to any holiday, it's going to be a Breaking Bad marathon, a Walking Dead marathon, or somehow both.
I agree.
Yeah.
Let's see. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, no. It was just going to continue down that rabbit hole. You can you get us back on track.
I was just going to say, like, I didn't think it was as sappy as it could have been. I remember not really liking it when I first saw it. And I'm still not huge on it, but it's one of those, it's not terrible, it's just not for me.
Can I ask you a question and you be completely honest with me?
Sure.
Did you not like it because it was something that was rented that you didn't want to see?
It could have been a little bit at the time, but honestly, I honestly don't like Katherine Heigl that much either.
And you know, I mean, I would give y'all honestly a hard time about that, but everybody has this, like, she's to you what Marianne Cotillard is to me. There's no legitimate reason I should not like her. Like,
oh, I have legitimate reasons.
Yeah, we have legitimate reasons. You didn't like one movie, or you didn't like the way she played a character in one movie, and therefore... Okay, we all have the same reason.
Two.
Oh, it was two movies. I'm sorry. What was the... I know one was Dark Knight Returns. What was the other one?
Inception.
Yeah, you need to see her outside of Christopher Nolan.
Apparently, because he always casts her as the villain, and it has rubbed off on me, because that is now how I see her in my life.
He casts the same people over and over, if you'll notice.
He does.
No, Christopher Nolan, I mean, everybody's got those, like, Scorsese has his too, but Christopher Nolan's are super obvious.
Yeah. Oh, just about any director has their usuals, and Wikipedia on just about every director's page will have like a list of actors and then like which movies they were in. That's just, you know, one, you know, that's just how filmmaking is.
But it's very true.
Yeah.
No, I didn't hate it this time around. I didn't really care for it that much. There's some things I picked up that I did enjoy. But, like, my whole problem was, it's like, what terrible parents thought this was a good idea?
I think that's the question our main characters are asking. Like,
I know, and they should be extremely pissed at them.
Well, they're dead, so they can't.
Oh, I don't care. They should be pissed at them still. Because, look, don't get me wrong. Me and you are great friends. And I'm becoming pretty decent friends with Sammy, I would say. But I would never in a million years say, you know what? You two are going to take care of my daughter whenever me and my possible ex, if possibly my ex-wife dies at the same time.
You have to remember, too, like, it's not just about being close friends with the parent. It's about being an integral, I cannot speak.
Integral?
Integral part of... The kid's life to the point where they like they know you and obvious lack of other options. But
yeah.
Both of them were like they were there every step the first year of her life. So I mean, it kind of made sense. The only thing that didn't make sense is the two of them doing anything together. What made the parents think that was a good idea?
I'm gonna try to defend the deceased Peter and Allison, neither of whom are really deceased, but
they are in my heart.
They're dead to you. So, Messer or Eric, whatever his real name is, and Holly, like you said, we're there for every event. And then when you get to the funeral and you see who Peter and Allison's relatives were, you have Peter's father, who's on oxygen and lives in another state. You had a stripper and then a pair and then cousins that had 9 children. I think Peter and Allison just, you know, took a bracing shot of whiskey and finished their will. It was just like, they are the port in a storm. They are the best port in a storm of shitty ports.
Right. And it's exactly like, Messer said. They were a decent option, but I kind of agree with him. I mean, the family with 9 kids, clearly they know how to keep a child alive. So there is that.
Yes. Well, what was it Jim Gaffigan said? Here's what having 5 children is like. You're drowning and then someone hands you a baby. I can't remember. I don't know if I got it right, but I'm paraphrasing. But also, I think Peter and Allison was like, first of all, we're never going to die in a car accident together. Second of all, Holly's the responsible one. She'll probably take care of him most of the time, and then Messer can be there as backup. Prove me wrong.
No, you get a point.
Yeah.
No, I think so. I think there's a point there. But also, I think his parents, like, and as their closest friends, they had a better concept of who they were as people than they may have even had themselves. Like, I think Katherine Heigl kind of alludes to it when she was like, you know, do you think this was all part of Allison's plan? Because it's like she said, like, Allison was her best friend, and he reminded her more of Allison than he did of Peter.
Yeah. And I kept waiting for the line, and it never came, and if it did, it's because I blacked out, apparently. But she reminds him of Peter, because Peter, you know, was a little bit more, you know, he was the attorney. He was, you know, a little bit more, I keep wanting to say straight-laced, and I don't even know if that's right.
I know, but I get what you're trying to say. Yeah, because I can't think of how you would phrase it either, because my brain's about gone tonight.
Well, I got my COVID booster today, so the fact that I'm making coherent sentences is, I guess, a good sign.
I would say so.
Also, Joseph, you brought up, you know, us raising your child. Your daughter is self-sufficient at this point, basically. She can microwave her own Hot Pocket.
That's true.
Like, it's not like you're handing us an infant.
Right. Yeah, it's not like raising a baby, just like raising a baby is not like raising a dog.
She can make her own Hot Pockets and everything. You just may have to clean up the mess that she made while she did it. But she is pretty self.
Not our microwave.
Well, that's true. It's just that you would have to deal with somebody talking back to you over the simplest things. So, like, why are you arguing with me over this?
Yes, Sammy, why are you arguing with me?
Yeah.
You make it too easy, that's why. Kind of want to look at this through a family law attorney perspective real quick.
I was going to ask.
Yeah, I kind of thought
What is the legal...
because it was more interesting watching the film from that perspective this time. And I didn't even think about that when I picked it. It is not...
It was literally just something was streaming on Netflix, so this was easy.
Right. It's not entirely inaccurate, which is really nice. It's just like an abbreviated version, right? Mm-hmm. So they are correct. Like, one of the things that they got right, now bear in mind, this is Georgia, so this is an entirely different state than Texas, which means they can have different custody laws. Yes, yeah, actually, which means they have different laws. But generally speaking, I think it works the same way. His attorney was right in that, since, you know, they were given guardianship, the first thing they would have to do is exactly what they did at the beginning. They go to a temporary hearing that gives them temporary custody of the kid. They don't immediately get final custody of her. So they had to go to a temporary hearing Now, that temporary hearing was, you know, a little bit off, and I think the judge probably would have asked a few more questions, but I honestly think they did that for comedic effect.
By a few more questions, you mean any?
Yes, right. Because they could have been drug dealers or pimps.
Okay, yeah. But were they drug dealers or pimps?
Yeah, I think he made a great point. I thought that that's getting into like one of our best lines, but I loved it when they came home. He was like, "Is that just what they do? They hand out babies? Here, you get a baby. We've got some extras. You want more?" So that's definitely true. And then you would have more than likely what they call a home study. So you'd have a social worker come out and do a home study, and they would have to go through criminal background checks. So like I said, it's an abbreviated version, but...
Well, they could have done that. This movie would have just been 2.5 hours, and I would have yelled.
Right. But it's not an entirely inaccurate look at the system. And while we're on the subject, I loved the social worker.
Yes. Now... Yeah.
Like the social worker in the movie.
I have issues, and the social worker touches on some of those issues, but we're going to get to that later whenever I go on a rant.
So. Yeah, I mean, I guess I can bring it up at that time too, but I have issues also. Like, well, they would honestly be able to just lock her out of the house, and she's standing right there like she doesn't know what they're doing.
Mm. Well, mine is just like, oh, wow, 2010, and we were still using the T-slur. Oh, we're still using it. Oh, okay.
Well, that's not so much her as it is the writers.
I know, but I was just going to say, it's like, oh, he makes the T-slur joke. Oh, the CPS lady is also now doubling down on that and tripled down. I think she used it twice. I was just like, ooh, this wouldn't fly now.
Oh, no, it would not.
Yeah
also, I don't also, think so.
Yeah, also things that wouldn't fly. Now, call waiting on the landline. I was just like, what year is this?
Or leaving your child with the cab driver, as delightful as he was.
Yeah. It's like, I believe this is I don't know if this is necessarily a felony, but it should be.
I mean, he was delightful, don't get me wrong.
Yes. And then he was delightful until the baby woke up and shit itself. And then he was
far.
Yeah.
And here's the deal too. I mean that, you know, their inappropriate, you know, use of slur takes takes precedence and focus, but there's, you know, other things going on in the scene, in the sense of, I do think she makes a good point that gets lost because of how they chose to execute it. But she makes a good point in talking about how, and the stuff they're making light of, and the things that they're talking about, those are her good cases.
Yeah.
Like
now, and I got her point, and I agree with her point, even though, and I mean, I have family that works in CPS, so yeah, I can see that. Like, oh, he's joking about his boss, you know, getting caught with a hooker. this is going to be a breeze.
Yeah, you have to
love right, because that's about the only thing that could mess it up. Because clearly, they, you know, they're taking care of the child. Yes. The child is fed. It's got a home. It's got a roof over its head. It's got a clean house.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because the parents, I mean, because the temp parents cared enough to lock her out while they picked up real quick.
Right. Correct.
God forbid CPS see a dirty house.
From their night of smoking weed.
Oh, I'm talking about the first time.
Oh, yeah, that also.
Yeah. Also, he did have to rush her off to the bathroom for being a belligerent drunk.
Which, by the way, how many parents do you think have been high while watching The Wiggles?
Most of them.
Joseph, if this is a confession.
I am not incriminating myself whatsoever. I'm going to say it's a good possibility.
Is that the only way that you can get through The Wiggles?
Oh, no. I've gotten through the Wiggles just by staring blankly at the TV. I'm like, is this over yet? Please, God, let it be. Oh, shit, they're singing again.
Isn't that most programming for children until they get to an age where you can show them something that has, like, story structure?
Yes, yes. And even then, like, because even my daughter now is almost 8 years old, and she'll watch some things like, I can't do this. This, my... I'm not good. This is not for me.
No, but okay, let me ask you this, though. Like,
but hold on. Wait, I have a point. Joseph, so did our parents.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Well, right.
Yeah, I don't mean this as a brag, but I'm pretty sure the only reason I had my own TV growing up is so they didn't have to watch that shit anymore.
That's the reason why, too.
Yeah, or Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure my parents hated the fact that the Disney Channel existed. No, did you ever find yourself becoming actually invested the way they did, the way he did in that one scene where he was talking to her about what had happened in the show? Did you ever find yourself becoming invested in one of the one of her kids' shows?
Not necessarily invested, because she used to love Doc McStuffins. And I remember I had to sit there and watch countless episodes. And I got to where I just got mad at the characters. I was like, all right, Stuffy, you're being a dick. Shut up. But there's no reason for that.
There is no silence. There is only Doc McStuffins.
Or the dumbest snowman in the world. What is his name? I don't remember anymore.
You're asking the two childless people what the name of it.
Well, you should know this shit. This is common knowledge.
No, it is not. No. See, when we were growing up, we had good children's television shows.
That's debatable.
Joseph, you and I had the same damn shows.
I watched Power Rangers, and my dad was, and my mom were just like, please watch that in your room.
My dad and I watched Tailspin together before school.
Oh, Tailspin was great.
Tailspin was the shit.
Although, my dad used to wake me up every morning and say, Joseph, X-Men's on. I was like, all right. And we'd both go watch X-Men. So, you may have a song. Yeah, I may have a point on that, Sammy.
See,
just like a slight one.
Yeah. Whenever I was a child, I would get up at 7 a.m. on a Saturday because that's when cartoons started. And if the clouds in the sky and the antenna was hitting just right, I could get Garfield and Friends from a Dallas CBS station.
Oh, Garfield and Friends. I used to love that show.
Yeah. Don't watch it now. Just going to put that out there. Don't watch it now.
It's probably not very good at all.
The thing is, it's like they replaced Looney Tunes with Doc McStuffins.
But Looney Tunes is not for infants. Doc McStuffin is for infants and children not yet ready to tackle the complex storytelling that was Looney Tunes, and I am being 1,000% serious.
Yeah, no, I believe you are. So, no, I really, biggest question, I really never got invested, but I did start questioning the morality of all these characters. Like, yeah, you're kind of a dick. I don't like you. I don't know why they hang around you. He's just dragging the whole group down. It's awful. Yeah.
I don't remember the context, but I know Patton Oswalt's daughter watched a lot of Doc McStuffins, yes. And he had a bit about it, and the only line I can remember is him saying as Doc McStuffins, oh, someone had a breech birth.
Oh, no. So, kind of when we're on the subject of all of this, speaking of people that get overly invested in things, were these not the creepiest neighbors?
Yes. Okay, let's just talk about the neighbors. I hate all of the neighbors.
They all suck.
I hate all of them. But the one that I hate most is Melissa McCarthy.
Correct, and I do believe that was intentional.
I hated everything she said. I hated how she treated... This movie almost made me a men's rights activist because I hated the way she treated her husband. I hated how everyone treated their husband. I hated how Holly treated Messer, and I hated how the screenwriters treated Messer.
Oh, and I totally disagree with that.
No, what I'm saying is I hate the cliche, and yes, all cliches come from some truth, that if a single woman and a single man are in a relationship, or in this case of this movie, taking care of a child that's not theirs. He must be a playboy, a player, you know, sleeps with anything that moves, and she must be a rigid bitch. I hate that cliche in this movie, especially on the second viewing. Really made me hate that cliche. I'm like, why can't the woman be the fuck up? Why can't the man be the uptight one?
And if you'll look, honestly, if you'll look at more recent, more recent films in the genre, they are leaning way more that direction. With, like, The Bridesmaids and the, I don't even know. Basically with the, what's her face? Amy Schumer. Like, with her whole series of films.
You're making Amy Schumer as a good point? Okay.
No, I'm not, and I'm not saying they're good films. I'm saying they're leaning that direction where it's not necessarily the man that's a screw up, it's the woman, or it's both of them. This film does lead pretty heavily into that cliche. I'm kind of okay with it because they both play it really well. Like, Katherine Heigl, I've now seen a theme in all of her movies where she just plays an uptight bitch in every single one of them. So I do get...
It's almost like it's typecasting.
Yeah.
I do kind of get why y'all feel the way that you do about her, but...
Well, it's not just us. It's a lot... Whether it's, like, she went on a tirade about Knocked Up years after she was in that movie. And she made some good points, but Judd Apatow and that group all made her out to be the frigid, you know, bitch. The Hollywood system coming down on her specifically, and then just women in general.
Right. And they're simultaneously, honestly, coming down on women and men. I mean, they're typecasting men in a similar way, which is, probably, by the way, and at some point we should do this film, Sleeping with Other People is such a good movie, in my opinion, because it did such a good job of effectively showing the flaws of two people and not really placing the blame on one or the other more. However, I her character in this film, I think, has a lot of good points where he's concerned. And
yeah. Well, and I'm going to say something right now with the movies and series that I have seen with Katherine Heigl in, which is not a lot, I'll admit. This is the best one so far. Other than her drunken belligerent scene with him, I don't disagree with her, and I kind of like her.
Right. I mean, one of my favorite scenes in the movie is when he comes back after having left for Phoenix. And he was trying to make he was trying to get mad at her for selling the home. And she makes that point to him, like, he kind of always treated her like they were an obligation.
He did, even though when you see him and Sophie together, he is 100% devoted to her. Right. But the second anyone else comes in that room, Sophie is an obligation, or everyone here is an obligation, and I can't live my life, and blah, blah, blah. And guess what? No parent can.
Right, and just because...
That's what happens when... Oh.
No. I mean, but I think that was part of the problem, too, is that she felt like he was just in it for Sophie, and which I think made a lot of sense. Like, it's a very real insecurity, and one that probably any normal person would have, is that he just loved Sophie. He didn't love her.
Yeah. Well, and in her defense, the movie didn't do the best job of... Well, the movie did show it a little bit, but it was almost like it's too late, you know, because you can tell whenever she's, you know, getting the kiss from Dr. Sam or Dr. What was the sandwich he got?
Sam. Turkey? The turkey on rye?
Yeah. Dr. Turkey on Rye. You can tell he's a little bit jealous and a little bit bitter. And it's honestly my favorite part of the movie is whenever he starts, you know, showing that he gives a shit about her, like, you know, offering to, you know, give her the money to finish or continue the renovation and, you know, the thank you dinner and the not being too mad whenever she gets his motorcycle crushed by a bus.
Yeah, but we'll kind of get to that in our likes and dislikes. I'm going to save that for that.
Well, and there was another part I did really like. Whenever they had that first fight, and he drove off on his motorcycle and came back, and they were watching the home movie of Peter and Allison, her basically yelling at him, obviously exhausted from, you know, giving birth to his child, and busting his balls about the fact that, you know, he had just had the nursery painted like 12 hours before, and while it might have been dry, the paint fumes were still in there. And, you know, she was just like, oh, look, we can take care of a child and not know what we're doing, and want to kill each other like half the time or two thirds of the time.
Right.
Yeah.
Because honestly, that's pretty accurate, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that was whenever I was really warming to both of them. And you could tell that they really do like each other. But at the same time, like the parent just said,
you fight over dumb things.
Yeah.
Okay, so I do have a question for the two of y'all. And I think this is a good one for us mm-hmm. I want to make it a staple for our rom-coms like this. And we can call it our, like, happily ever after segment. Do they stay together?
Can I go first?
Yeah, go ahead.
If I was writing the sequel to this, yeah, I would say they're still together. Yeah. I don't have an elaboration on that, but because in my head, like, Peter and Allison come back from the dead, and they basically, you know, go on a zombie hunting spree, you know, as retaliation for abandoning them with a 1-year-old. But but no, I can see them still together based on one line from Dr. Turkey on Rye, and that's after the Thanksgiving fight when he says, if my wife and I had fought like that, we'd...
Right, and I think the kind of premise behind that, which you see in a lot of romantic films, not just comedy specifically, which I totally agree with, which is the fact that they're fighting is an indication mm-hmm. that they care.
Or in some cases, or the screenwriter just has to shoehorn a female character in there, and they're the worst character in the movie until they suddenly believe in their man. One day we're going to do JFK, I will do the monologue about how Oliver Stone did Sissy Spacek absolutely no favors in that movie.
I agree. The way it was done in the film, especially by the end, if they were to make a sequel, yes, they would definitely be together still.
Yeah,
they would have fights, but not as severe as in the first one.
Yeah, and also not every couple that's lived long happy had long happy relationships. You know, because you don't necessarily have to get married. Fight all the time. Some can just get through a marriage and, you know, communicate like adults. They're rare, but they
right.
happen.
They do happen.
And then there are people that fight all the time, and you're just like, please break up. Please get divorced. Please stop being in the same room as each other.
Okay. Is there anything you want to touch on before we move to our segments?
No.
I would like to introduce a new feature. As we get into segments, called Did John Like the Soundtrack?
Oh, I love this because I have thoughts on this soundtrack.
Yeah. I really liked the soundtrack, and don't go on Spotify hoping that what's on there is the same. Like, find someone who made a playlist, because it didn't have the Faith Hill song that was on the credits. It didn't have the Pearl Jam song. It did have the Elvis Costello cover. And due to rights issues, it says it has the Amy Winehouse song, but it doesn't. So you have to just go listen to an Amy Winehouse album instead. But yeah, I like the soundtrack.
This film won me over with the Amy Winehouse and Pearl Jam songs. And
oh God, the Pearl Jam song. I love the Pearl Jam song.
Yeah, the Pearl Jam song is fantastic. And I do think this goes towards my running theory. That, and I think we need to keep tabs on this, okay?
Okay.
My hypothesis is that chick flicks have the best soundtracks.
I'm going to agree and disagree, because there are many non-chick flick films that have amazing soundtracks, and then there are some chick flicks that have terrible soundtracks. See Serendipity.
Yeah.
Which, you know, we've already covered. So.
You know, I mean, point taken, but I'm just speaking in general terms.
Well, I think chick flicks in general should have great soundtracks because, you know, you're trying to make people fall in love, make them laugh, you know.
Yeah, every time time you hear that one song or a couple songs, it brings you back to the moments in those in the movie.
Yeah. I mean, I hear a Jimmy Durante song, and I've got like four movies popping in my head simultaneously, usually all set in New York, possibly during the winter. But and also, like, the reason Tarantino doesn't have scores for his soundtracks, and he uses, like, even with Hateful Eight, you know, basically using a bunch of Morricone thing leftovers, he has the entire history of recorded music at your disposal. Why would you settle for just anything? And I wouldn't give the soundtrack like an A plus. I would give it like a B plus because it's not perfect. But I mean, it's got whenever the soundtrack is working, it's great. Plus the fact that he's singing Radiohead to Sophie to calm her down.
Oh, yes. Right, that was the other piece of it. Yes.
I mean, it's the cliche Radiohead song everyone knows, but that's just me fighting for our friend Zane because he's not here.
Yeah.
Okay, so. As we move into our segments, do y'all have best line worst lines?
Yep.
Okay. So for our listeners, we have really, I don't know, two-ish, three segments depending on the episode. But one of our consistent ones is best line, worst line, where we give our best line and worst line from the film. We're not creative at naming stuff on this podcast. So if anybody has alternative names.
You can host this show.
Correct. So Joseph John, best line, worst line.
Joseph, why don't you go first? Because I've got like several to pick from.
I have one line that really stood out to me that I really liked, and it's from Kumail Nanjiani.
No, you're gonna say my favorite line. Go ahead.
You know what marriage is like? Imagine a prison, and they don't change anything.
Oh my God, you picked a line of his, but I actually put that in my worst lines.
Did you? Well, I guess because the only one that on this podcast that's been married, I found that very funny.
Yeah.
It resonated with you.
So before I get into my little inside baseball and why I put that on my worst list, I follow a subreddit called Are the Straights Okay? And the answer with every meme is usually no. And every single post is, you know, someone from, you know, the LGBT community or just, you know, a rational person will post a meme that someone has posted that is basically like, women are shrews, my wife is awful, or men are idiots, or, you know, basically like, why would you even get married if this is how you feel? So that line registers with me a lot as someone that does want to get married, you know, one day to the right human, hopefully not in a we're taking care of an infant situation, where I'm like, why do you see marriage as a prison? It's, you know, having not been married, I don't have an answer to that question.
Well, and I think it's all dependent on who you end up with, because honestly, you can start off very much in love. Mm-hmm. Everything's great, and then all of a sudden, it just kind of turns. Yeah. And it just sometimes it just happens that way.
Yeah. Or, you know, as I like to put it, with every movie that we have ever watched, usually the ones that Sammy picks, sometimes the ones I pick. Why can't y'all just talk to each other like adults?
It's easier said than done.
I know. Look, right. Boy can dream.
Marriages get very complicated yeah. very fast.
Yeah.
What about you, John?
So, all right, so can I do my worst line first? Since my other one, because I picked two. And I didn't write down the line. It's actually an exchange. And it's not so much that... And it's just something I hate in written media in general. That expository dialogue where you think the audiences are a bunch of idiots, whenever the cop has to explain what CPS is and these special kind of cases, like the audience doesn't already know, the parents are dead. And I don't know, just even on the first watch and the second watch, because I watched this movie twice, that just hits me like a sledgehammer, because I'm like, I hate that shit. Like she's a grown woman and she had to ask what CPS was. Like, I'm childless and I know what CPS is. That did not need to be explained.
Yeah, that didn't even really resonate with me.
Just as someone that has listened to a lot of other podcasts about writers and how much they hate exposition, I have grown to notice exposition a lot. And whenever it's done badly, it's awful. There's a reason, even though I love the first Bad Boys film, I kind of hate the first Bad Boys film, because there is literally that scene where two people are talking. It's like, hey, remember 10 years ago when I was a prostitute and blah, blah, blah. It's like, no one talks like that.
The characters that this movie does.
I'm just all right.
Well, I have my.
Well, I haven't even done my best line.
Oh, go for best line.
Okay, mine is also a Kumail Nanjiani line, and it's in reference to him and Messer's boss. Whenever he says, "I hate him so much, I want to frame somebody's murder on him."
Joseph, did you have a worse line?
Honestly, I didn't. I was trying to think of a line, and I just really couldn't. Nothing really stood out as extremely horrible or anything, except for whenever he pointed that out, and I was just like, you know what, that is kind of awful. No, like, there was a couple, like, that one line really made me give me a good chuckle, and it wasn't really a line, it was just, like, one of the wives of the husband goes in to kiss her, and she's like, okay, nope, that's enough. I thought that was pretty funny. I was like, oh, that's, they clearly hate each other.
So my best lines are, there's a couple. One is when they're outside by the bouncy house when Peter and Messer are setting up for the party, and he goes, who needs weed dealers when you've got these delivery kids?
My dad's a pastor.
And they steal the weed from the delivery kids. And then the other one is their impromptu Wheels. What is the name of that song?
Oh, Wheels on the Bus. Wheels on the
Bus go round and round, and then Keanu Reeves saves the bus.
Yeah.
I particularly appreciated that. And then I the worst one, I don't have anything in particular either. I think just basically anything Melissa McCarthy says.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I have one more best line, since no one picked it.
What's that?
Whenever Katherine Heigl is taking Sophie to Dr. Turkeyon Rai's office the first time, and she can't get the stroller to
right.
like fold, and she's like, "Nobody's gonna steal a stroller," and I'm just like, "Lady, yeah, they will. You underestimate people, and things ain't cheap."
Oh, and I think one of the other ones, too, I mean, it's not really a best line, but I love the exchange between Messer and Sophie when the night she gets sick, when they were kind of like on a little cute mini date.
And he's that talking was great. To her.
I thought that was a really good exchange.
I like older women. I mean, not that much older.
Not that much older. Yes, that was a line.
Oh, and Katherine Heigl had another great line whenever Messer's questioning her about the doctor-patient, rules against dating, and she's like, "Well, he's a pediatrician. If she is dating, if he is dating a patient, there's a problem."
All right, likes and dislikes. So, for any first-time listeners, this is the portion of the show where we go through our likes and dislikes that we haven't talked about once again.
Just you know, in case.
Naming stuff.
Hey, you know. We just get straight to the point. Why? Yeah.
Wait, didn't we come up with a different name for this segment last time?
I don't remember. I've slept in that slump since last time.
The good? I called it the bad and the ugly.
That's right.
We called it the what?
The good, the bad, the bad, and the ugly.
Oh, the good, the bad, and the ugly. Okay, that's right. We like that. Okay. So, good.
So, whenever I'm taking notes now, I have to make three categories no. now instead of two?
No. It's just the good and then the bad and the ugly.
Oh, okay.
She did a good job, because I didn't even think of it that far.
He's like, I was just trying to be funny on the show, and you took me seriously.
Yeah, it doesn't happen very often, so I just rolled with it.
Joseph, that's how the show started.
He wasn't wasn't actually going to do a podcast, guys.
It just happened. I
mean, look, Joseph can tell you I was talking about doing a podcast for 2 fucking decades. You came along and you were just like, yeah, I'll do it.
I
was like, all right, I called
your bluff.
I remember
we attempted it, but we didn't have the technology at the time.
All right, anyway. The good.
John, why don't you start off?
Okay. First, I've got to give a shout out to my girl, the CPS lady, and just how invested she is in this relationship. And how she goes from, you're not boning, great. Oh, fuck, you're boning, boo. And then by the end of it, she's crying on the way to the airport to rescue the relationship. One thing I really love about the movie is the slow burn of Messer and Holly's relationship, on how it starts off where they basically hate each other, and then very slowly, like, it goes from they hate each other, or more like she hates him. They're friends, but on a begrudging level, to they're stuck in the situation, and even though they're fighting, they're still finding a way to come together, and then, you know, as it ends. And I also like Dr. Turkeyon Rai's wine prescription. Like, I liked that, and unfortunately, I didn't like the resolution her using it, because I do think she went a little far. And, you know, even though she is right, she also took it a little far.
Right. But hey, it did lead to that his great one liner where he was like, oh, great, you're an angry drunk. This is going to be a fun next 18 years.
Yep. Those are things I like.
Anything? Or
oh, and,
oh, okay. Go ahead.
Oh, and I also like getting high and watching the Wiggles.
Correct.
Yeah. Which, by the way, did you know the Wiggles are Australian?
Yes, I do.
Did you know there was a girl Wiggle for a while? She just retired.
If he had known that, that would have helped that one neighbor hunt them down and murder them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Her name is Emma.
Yep. She retired. She had endometriosis. I read up on this.
Oh, wow. I did not know that.
Yeah. I guess she was trying to get pregnant or something, but she retired for health reasons. And she was not the first Wiggle to do the same.
Thank you all for coming to Wiggle Talk.
You know, it's important to know.
Yeah.
Tune in next week for the conclusion of the Wiggle trilogy.
Wait, what Wiggle? Are we doing like 2, 3, 1? What? Is the third entry in the first story? Are we Lucasing this? What's going on? Okay.
Remember, we're high when we watch the Wiggles, so numbers are relative.
Gotcha.
There's no meaning to the numbers.
Yeah. And then I have a few things I hated. If we want to do those now, or do we want to go through everyone's likes?
No, that's fine. Just do both.
Just do both? Okay. I kind of already touched on that. I hate the cliche this movie was written on, with the man has to be a player and kind of, you know, non-caring until he cares, and the woman has to be a bitch. Like, I hate that cliche. We've already danced this dance. We have also danced the dance of we hate Melissa McCarthy's character and everything that comes out of her mouth. I've already talked about the tea slur. So I guess the last thing I have is her giving Messer crap for singing Radiohead to Sophie to soothe her as being depressing, even though it worked. I'm done.
I also did enjoy like the few montages they have with taking care of the kid, because it's one of those I related to those because you screw up a lot.
The one that ends, even though it ends the montage and begins the lead into having her Sophie's hernia checked out, whenever Sophie's about to poop and Katherine Heigl's solution is like she's going in your hat.
Well, and you do pick up on cues like, oh no, she's about to shit.
Yep.
I did appreciate that stuff there.
Mm-hmm.
Things I didn't like, I felt it was very formulaic for me. It's one of those you kind of see everything coming a mile away.
Call and, back to the Ebert review.
Yeah, you can see it coming a mile away. It was nothing really like, oh, okay, yeah, I could have told you that was going to happen. And I really I still, even though you did bring up some good points, I still think they're not great parents for putting these two together that obviously do not like each other.
Yeah.
But I felt that was a little forced whenever they got into together near the middle of the movie. Yeah.
Joseph, we have forgotten one major thing that this movie did wrong.
What's that?
This movie was apparently successful enough that Warner Brothers decided Greg Berlanti should direct Green Lantern.
And I will not forgive him for that.
No, and also apparently Green Lantern was the last movie that Berlanti directed, according to Wikipedia, because everything else is like, he just wrote it. And now he controls the CW and everything they do. And by the way, the CW is for sale if anyone would like to throw, I don't know, what did Karen say, a quarter at them?
Okay.
Be sure to get changed.
You know what? The CW
is terrible.
No.
Hey, they did
great. They have come out with The Vampire Diaries, which was fantastic. The Originals, which was even better. How often does that happen? Because that was a spinoff. And then Supernatural, which was so good and so successful that it ran for 15 years.
Well,
which arguably is about 10 more than it should have, but I digress.
Again, successful, it does not always mean good, and good does not always mean successful.
Supernatural is fantastic.
Oh, all but right. They did make The Flash, and I really like The Flash. I
thought they also did good. Supergirl.
Want to say, and I could be incorrect, that the CW, did they do Gossip Girl?
They did.
They did.
Which is my favorite show of all time. So, there's that.
They did do Buffy.
Yes, but
no, I don't. I take that back. I have a hard time envisioning him playing Messer's role. But then again, he kind of did in Sweet Home Alabama. So it's
that,
not like
I was going to say, he has played that role before.
Yeah, it's not like he couldn't do that. And I think Josh Chanel is good enough. I mean, I think he's a capable enough actor. He could have played a different role. I don't know. That's a hard question to answer because it is the way it is. And I think that Josh Lucas is a more talented actor, probably.
I will agree with you on that.
But I think that Josh Duhamel was suited for this character.
Okay.
So I'll leave it at that. Basically, my bad and my ugly kind of boils down to one thing. For being a slow burn, which I agree with you on, and I did very much appreciate, they went from 0 to 60. Basically, it went from we hate each other, but we're learning how to live with each other, to we're going to sleep together.
Yeah, but you got to remember over the course of 2 hours, we see the entirety of a year.
Right, and I understand that, but in my opinion, that's no excuse because I've seen it done better in other films, and it's time management. And I think they could have structured this better to show some of that growth. And really, all I think it would have taken is maybe an additional scene. Maybe that's all it takes is one additional scene to, like, they could have cut out a scene with the freaking neighbors and added in another scene between the two of them to demonstrate how their relationship was progressing. But it really pretty quickly went from, I mean, I'm not saying they did a terrible job. They threw it in there in snippets, which is fine. But I felt like it was missing a little something, and that's just my opinion.
I agree with you about losing any scene with the neighbors because they're the worst. But I don't know. I kind of see, because you see that, you know, the movie starts with them basically hating each other, and I think the progression is fine because, you know, by the time Sophie is shitting in his hat, they're on the floor laughing together, and it's slow, but I mean, and I guess in some cases that it does seem like it goes from 0 to 60, but I don't know. I think it goes from 0 to 15 and 15 to 35 and then from 35 to 75.
Actually, I agree.
All right, I guess that leaves our last segment.
Yes. Did Greg Berlanti ruin the CW?
All right. John, Joseph, did y'all survive?
You go ahead, John.
Oh no, you go.
You gonna let me go?
I'm gonna let you go.
Okay. Well, I was fully prepared to say, God, no, I didn't survive. But honestly, it's not a terrible movie by any means.
According to Roger Ebert, it is.
According to Roger Ebert. Believe me, I've seen a lot worse. And it's one of those, it's just not for me. But at the same time, there, I can see why Sammy likes this movie. I can see why it's one of those movies, like anything I would put on, that it was just comfort food. Like, I know a lot of people don't like it, but I like it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, and it's a very comforting movie for you. But I'll say I barely survived.
All right.
Because it's one of those, like, I'm kind of neutral in the movie. I don't hate it, don't love it. Just kind of there for me.
My turn?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, so when we started this show, all we needed was a laugh. That was a Motley Crue reference. but when we started the show, we did talk about doing the Heigl-pocalypse, which is where we talk shit about all of Katherine Heigl movies from beginning to end. And then when I found out the only way to get the second movie was to spend $100 on a Blu-ray on eBay, I very quickly ended that because no. So the joke still remains that Katherine Heigl is my nemesis. I actually don't really care about Katherine Heigl one way or another. I wish her career was better. I wish she didn't have the reputation she did. And I want to know how much of it is true and how much of it is not. But we're not talking about that today. We're talking about Life as We Know It, a movie that came out in 2010 that I didn't go see and would not have seen until last week whenever Sammy said, let's do this movie. So we're here now. So not knowing a thing about this movie except that it, you know, didn't have the best critical reception. This is one of those, it has like a 20-something rating on critical score on Rotten Tomatoes, but, you know, the audience score on like, what is it, Cinema Score, where, you know, people go in and if it makes them feel good, they give it an A. Well, that's this movie. I was surprised, and I think I started texting Sammy, but I didn't totally show my hand. I really enjoyed this movie on the first viewing. And then I rewatched it for a second viewing today, like minutes before we started recording. And I still like the movie. The flaws are more glaring on the second watch, like every time Melissa McCarthy shows up or a neighbor, I cringe. So much of the cliches I hate. But in the end, I'm glad I saw this movie, and I can now point to a Katherine Heigl movie that I don't feel bad about recommending. So yeah, I survived this one. And now, Sammy, why don't you please answer the mystery that no member of our audience is ever going to guess. Did you survive this movie that you picked?
yeah, I did. Yeah, this is like I was excited to see this one on Netflix, but I actually own it, and it's one I go back to every once in a while. Like I just get in the mood. It's a few of her movies are like that: 27 Dresses, The Ugly Truth, which I think we should cover. The Ugly Truth, y'all might like it better even. Yeah, it's I don't know. It's just heartwarming. It's a feel good movie. I like it. It's funny. It's, you know, I don't have to think. It's exactly how y'all described. It's comfort food. Is it a Oscar-winning Best Picture? No. But does it make me happy? Yes. So.
Yeah. Also, just because it won the Oscar does not necessarily mean it's good. Correct. I point to a lot of movies, including Academy Award winner Suicide Squad.
Oh, my God.
Chicago's not bad, but it is not Best Picture. I was thinking more like Academy Award winner Suicide Squad.
And
never forget.
They should not have won that award at all.
No, they should not have won
any award. Or Academy Award winner La La Land. Oh, I mean, sorry.
I like La La Land, but it was not the best one picture. Well, oh, and it wasn't. It still wasn't.
It wasn't.
The better movie actually won that year.
Poor La La Land.
The All movie's right. fine, but there's a, but it is like, how do I put this? It's like when a really cool punk band started off, and that's Whiplash, and then the success went to their head, and they do a complete sellout album that a lot of people like, but the purists hate. That's La La Land. And yep. Then they followed up with a third film, First Man, that nobody really liked, and everybody said that said they liked it, including me, was probably lying. And that's Damien Chazelle's career. But we're not talking about Whiplash or First Man or La La Land next week. What are we talking about next week?
I believe it's John's pick.
Yes, it is. And I did Sammy a solid, and I pushed back the old movie that she didn't want to watch, because the weird thing is we're actually recording this, and we started recording as the news broke that Bob Saget died, and that is very tragic, and I don't know when we're going to do Dirty Work. I really do want to do Dirty Work as a now Bob and Norm Macdonald tribute, but next week we are paying tribute to the late great. She almost made it to 100, Betty White. And we are going to talk about a movie that my dad took us to see as a family. And three people entered that theater and two people came out liking that movie. You can decide who was who. But next week, we're going to talk about Lake Placid, in which I am elevating Betty White to the star of that movie. And then everyone else is secondary. So talking a big, is it an alligator or a crocodile?
You know, I know.
And
by the way, for all our listeners, just remember, I fought for us to do the proposal so we could go out with our discussion of Betty White singing To the Window, To the Wall. But these two had to fight me, so Lake Placid it is.
Yeah, I will see your Betty White singing Get Low, which is the name of that song, and raise you her telling Mad-Eyed Moody and everyone else in that scene to suck her dick.
Yeah.
And knowing Betty White the way I do, that's the one she would prefer. So
you're probably right.
Yeah. All right, so next week we're talking alligators or crocodiles. I'm going to look that up. So the one listener we have that's going to correct me doesn't have to do that. So
until next week.
All right, bye everyone.
Surviving Chick Flicks is brought to you by the Circle of Jug. The show is edited by John, and all clips used are the property of their copyright holders, and no infringement is intended. Please follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok, and leave us a 5-star rating at Apple Podcasts or wherever you get the show. If there's anything you would like us to cover on the show, or just drop us a line at survivingchickflicks@gmail.com. The show is copyright 2022, Circle of Jug Productions, all rights reserved.
Guys, we were expecting you. What a surprise. What?
Sweetie, you have shit on your face.